This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. There's a debate on college campuses these days over no means no versus yes means yes. Each of those is shorthand for how to approach sexual consent. Is saying no enough to indicate that you're not interested in a sexual encounter? Or should you have to say yes to confirm that you are? Many schools nationwide have adopted the latter, also known as affirmative consent. And now some students at Harvard want to do the same. They're pushing for a change on campus in how Harvard handles sexual assault allegations. But some legal experts say this shift could actually cloud the issue, not clarify it. They say a yes means yes policy can be confusing and that it may be unrealistic to put it into practice. Joining us to talk about both sides of these arguments are Colby Bruno. She's the senior legal counsel for the Victim Rights Law Center, which is a national organization with an office in Boston. Hi, Colby, and thanks for coming in.
Hi.
And also here in the studio is Mary Rose Mazzola. She's a graduate student at the Kennedy School of Government, and she's an organizer with the student group Harvard Students Demand Respect. Mary Rose, thanks to you for coming in as well.
Thanks for having me, Sasha.
And Mary Rose, would you start us off and tell us why you believe, why your position is that affirmative consent, meaning yes means yes, is better than the current policies, which tend to be no means no?
Sure. So we're talking about this issue, first of all, because Harvard is under investigation by the Department of Education for violating the law, and that is Title IX. And because sexual assault is rampant on college campuses, DOJ statistics have 1 in 5 women will experience an attempted or completed sexual assault by the time they graduate in 4 years. Everyone agrees that, at least reasonable people agree, that non-consensual sex is rape. But it's up to colleges to define consent. And right now, Harvard doesn't define consent at all in its policy. The issue has had a long, depressing history. It's the rule so far has basically been if you don't say no, then you're saying yes. And so negative consent is bad because it puts the onus on the victim, both in the instance of an assault and also later during the adjudication process.
Whereas yes means yes ultimately ends up putting the pressure on the person accused if an accusation of rape or misconduct.
Yeah, I would characterize it as saying both would have to explain that they consented affirmatively going into the policy. And so thankfully, there have been really positive developments lately on this issue, which is essentially affirmative consent. It's gotten support from California Governor Jerry Brown, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, the White House Task Force on Sexual Assault that put its report out in the spring.
Mary Rose, what do you think are the weaknesses in no means no?
I think the weaknesses in no means no, apart from what putting the onus on the victim, which again hurts in the instance and in a cultural setting from a preventative standpoint, also in the adjudication process. You're going to revisit those kind of questions like, what were you wearing and how did you demonstrate that you didn't want something, as opposed to saying, okay, were you both affirming and participating in this.
On the other hand, and we'll hear this, I know, from Colby, but one of the arguments often against no or yes means yes is that oftentimes when sexual encounters unfold, they're kind of wordless. You know, it moves from one thing to the next, and someone isn't saying, are we going to do this now, and is it okay to do this now? So do you think
right.
It's realistic to have a yes at every stage of a sexual encounter?
I do, and I think it actually is really natural. I think what's important to remember is that this is using a reasonable person's standard, so it's a reasonable person in that position. And so the consent's also given verbally and non-verbally, and that's incorporated in all of the policies, except for Antioch College, which is kind of the outlier there on just a verbal consent.
Colby Bruno, would you jump in? Because I know you take the opposite stance on this. You tend to believe that this could be requiring yes means yes could be unrealistic and it's problematic. Why do you think that?
I mean, I think so at the Victim Rights Law Center, we represent victims of rape and sexual assault on college campuses. We've been doing it now for 11 years. And so we are in the room with the students who are bringing these complaints, who are trying to prove these allegations. So on the one hand, the burden shift is terrific. It would kind of open up a door, but I'm not sure.
Burden shift away from
the
victim
burden shift
towards accused.
Exactly. But I'm not sure that gets to the kind of the root of the problem. I think that in terms of affirmative consent, we have two things that are problematic. Number one, we don't live in a bubble. It would be great if we were trained from very early on that yes means yes, affirmative consent, and when we go from there, when we're children. Okay, but that's not the way the society works. That's not the way that we work. And so without that sort of bubble around us, it does get muddied. This idea of consent does get muddied. And so what I think is that we want to move the issue forward, and we're all for moving the issue forward, but consent is a criminal standard to talk about, okay? It's not this unwelcomeness, which is a more of a civil standard. So I think what happens when we talk about affirmative consent and
when
legislating
When you say unwelcome,
it,
you're referring to Harvard's policy now,
yes,
which refers to unwelcome conduct, which is its own vague,
which is
broad
its, right,
term.
Right. I don't think it's going to make, I don't think affirmative consent is going to make anything clearer. I think that the problems are that there are generally no witnesses to this crime, that one person says there was consent, one person says there wasn't consent. Another big problem that we're seeing with affirmative consent is what happens if both people are intoxicated? That means that both people need to get the yes. And so we're seeing a few more counter complaints or cross complaints that the perpetrator is bringing against the victim and the victim is bringing against the perpetrator. And that is a real muddied issue.
Well, Colby, I'm glad you brought up the issue of intoxication because I wanted to raise this with both of you. There was a month or so ago a group of Harvard professors who wrote a public letter criticizing Harvard's shift in its policy. And one of the professors that we interviewed on the air brought up the issue of drinking. And she said basically things get very messy and gray when alcohol is involved. And I'm particularly interested in, Mary Rose, in your perspective on this. Does alcohol need to be, a, if not an excuse, a factor or a consideration somehow when allegations are made and allegations of sexual misconduct come up?
Sure. And I'm glad that Colby brought up the whole societal issue because, you know, we're right. There's a society outside of college campuses that contributes to the culture here. I think that drinking is an issue, but at the same time, Mass General Law states that if you're incapacitated, you can't consent. So if you are intoxicated to a certain degree, then you can't consent anyways. And so I think that while it does factor in, affirmative consent can clear that up in the sense that whatever your beliefs or your practices were before stepping foot on this campus, as soon as you're on campus, you understand what our culture is here, that we want it to be affirmative consent at every step of the process. And that might be also a preventative measure. And so that's something we're focusing on. Alcohol is a factor, but again, not a drive behind these assaults. And it's important to remember that despite the mitigating circumstances, we can change the culture from the moment you step on campus.
Right. And from my perspective at the Victim Rights Law Center, basically, I don't think that we need to go to affirmative consent in order to make those lines clear, to make those line the boundaries clear between two students.
So if you don't think we need to go to yes means yes, mm-hmm. is no means no good enough? Or do you think there's some third alternative?
I mean, I don't think there's a third alternative.
It has to be one or the other.
I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure that it has to be as draconian as we are trying to make it here. I mean, I think that we can put in place a policy that's very clear, that has the best policies in the country, have vignettes that talk about what consent looks like. Instead of just three words, consent is unwanted, you need yes means yes. It's not like that. It breathes life into the words. And I think that's what we really need across the country for colleges and universities to do. The other piece that I've seen that is, I think, without a doubt, is it's not, I think one thing that we've seen big time is it's not necessarily about the policy. It's about the implementation of the policy. And when I talk about the waters being muddied, I talk about board members, students, faculty, independent investigators not being able to understand yes means yes, every step of the way, but they're able to understand a more colloquial version of that.
Which leads us to an even broader question, and this has come up before. Is a college campus or a college administration even the right place to be adjudicating this? We have a criminal justice system that handles rapes that happen or allegations of rape that don't happen on a campus. Mary Rose, should colleges not even be dealing with this? And if there's an allegation, should they hand it over to the DA's office?
Absolutely not. I think colleges should
be totally
dealing
agree.
With this. I totally
agree.
You're both not in support of that.
Yes, we are totally not in support of that.
There's a reason that we have a criminal justice system, but we also have civil procedures on college campuses. One of the big reasons there is for reporting standards. The reason there's a preponderance of the evidence standard in civil procedure on college campuses is because you are dealing with these he said, she said, behind closed door experiences, and that doesn't make them illegitimate. It just makes them harder to process, harder to adjudicate. And so if you look at the tiny, tiny amounts of these rape cases that go through the court system to a final process where someone is convicted, you would understand why no one would want to participate in that process. And you'd also see a point where if everything had to go through the criminal justice system, a lot of perpetrators would come back to campus and be in class with their victim the next day.
Colby, in about the 30 seconds we have left, is one of your points that there just needs to be very good training of college boards and administrators to implement whatever policy is in place?
Big time, what we need to do is campus surveys. MIT did their campus survey. They published the results. They found all these fascinating topics. We don't know enough about rape and sexual assault on college campuses to keep changing the way the process works and the way the definitions are set out there. We need to look at what we've got. We need to focus on it. We need more training. We need to look at those surveys, and that's what we need to do. We need to take those surveys and base our trainings on those.
So learn more and craft a policy accordingly.
Absolutely.
Thanks to both of you for coming in. Colby Bruno is the Senior Legal Counsel for the Victim Rights Law Center, and Mary Rose Mazzola is a grad student at the Kennedy School at Harvard and an organizer with the student group Harvard Students Demand Respect. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stay with us. We have more ahead. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.